a veritable cornucopia of kookiness.
Phil's Osophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
This is Too Wretched for Radio with Phil Johnson, the long absent wandering one, Phil Johnson. Welcome back to the world, Phil. You've been out and about. You've been a wandering. Where you been?
I have been, actually. I was in England 2 weeks ago, and I'm really just between things on a couple of days here. I leave for Australia.
What's happening in Australia?
Doing conferences in Brisbane and Sydney.
You know, I would love to go to Australia someday. There's a lot of good believers there. I know it's a lot like the American church landscape. There's a lot of stinkers, but there's some good brothers and sisters there.
Yeah. Oh, no question about it. I love Australia, and I love our Australian brethren who, you know, share our convictions. It's something about that culture, I think, that it's just bold and candid, and I love that sort of down-to-earth candor.
And it's really, really pretty. Now, I know that you haven't been there yet, but I would ask you, are they feeling the same pressures that evangelicals in the States are? It was that Israel, I always say his name wrong, the rugby football soccer player guy.
Right.
That, you know, he tweeted about homosexuality, got hammered and fired for it.
Right. Yeah.
Are they feeling the same pressure there that we are here about Christians not speaking their minds?
Yeah, it seems to me they are. I mean, I follow maybe three or four Australian Twitter accounts, and it seems to me that it's a similar kind of thing. The government is trying to enforce political correctness, and things are changing morally, and it's affected the church. There are lots of people who would self-identify as evangelicals in Australia who are prepared to capitulate on gender issues and, you know, homosexuality and things like that.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Tommy Lee, the drummer fellow. You're a big Megadeth fan, aren't you, Phil?
Not exactly. No, I'm classical music.
Yeah, I've seen the 8-tracks in your car. Don't you try to give me that lob lolly. Okay, the drummer guy, Tommy Lee, he was doing a screed against all things, well, Motley Crue. What is he from?
Motley Crue.
Thanks, Joey. It's Motley Crue, Phil. That's how into 80s rock you and I are.
I wouldn't know. I know who he is because, you know, he's kind of a celebrity. I see pictures of him. But all I could tell you is he's a rock musician. I wouldn't have even known he was a drummer. That's how ignorant I am.
Well, he was being rather prolific on the Instagram machine, and he was going after all things conservative, whether it was politics, religion, and basically stating, once we get back in power, look out, we're going to paint the White House the colors of the rainbow. We're going to drop abortion medicine all over the Bible Belt. I mean, you know, he was just on and on about it. And what I found fascinating, Phil, was that he even went after, guess what high-profile evangelical Tommy Lee tore into?
Al Mohler?
No. See? You went for it. You just fell for it. That was perfect. No, Joel Osteen. Right?
Really? Really? Yeah. So Joel Osteen is too conservative for him.
Nobody is going to be exempt from the coming. Wow. You will profess that you are gender fluid in your worldview. Otherwise, we will come after you. He was harsh against Joel Osteen, who was going to be one of the first capitulators on the whole issue. I don't think you're going to be able to get away with kind of riding it out and giving a Hillsong-like answer.
No, you're exactly right. That's what I keep saying to evangelicals I know who say, you know, we need to soften our rhetoric. We need to tone it down because this is not politically correct anymore to speak of homosexuality as a sin. So we need to find different ways to talk about it and obscure the fact that we think this is an abomination to God. And my answer is, I don't care what you do unless you fully embrace homosexuality. Yep. You are not going to win the... And in fact, you'd really have to renounce Christ completely to win the affections of a lot of people in the world.
So the churches that are trying to be coy and dance around the subject, well, you know, we embrace everybody. We welcome everybody. And maybe we'll tell them later that's not so pleasing to God, maybe sort of. I don't think you're going to be able to peddle that and get away with it. Tommy Lee will not have it that way.
Right. Well, and it's not an honest approach anyway. It's that is a dishonest way for churches to deal with the truth. And it's a large part of the problem in secular culture is that the church has not done her job in proclaiming the truth. Been too worried about being attractional and being seeker sensitive. And so we've toned down so much for so long that the church is filled with people who maybe aren't really even aware of what Scripture teaches about certain moral issues, but they certainly don't have the will to speak in a way that's going to win the disfavor of the world, because evangelicals as a group have spent the last four decades desperately trying to win the affection of the world, and it's a huge mistake.
Lately, we've been having a little bit of a renewed debate on wretched, not everybody agreeing with the Christian response to the demand of our government to use gender pronouns that are acceptable to somebody who's transgender or whatever, whether a Christian should do that or not. And some people are saying, you know, no, we should not, because it's a compromise. We are somehow complicit in their dysphoria. Others would say, look, these are people with a mental illness, and so if that's what they want to hear, it's no big deal because we've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
What do you think of that argument?
Well, it's not an easy issue. You know, what I say publicly about that issue would be as clear as possible, as straightforward as possible. If I'm dealing with an individual on an individual level, I'm not going to be trying to pick a fight. So I might be diplomatic and so on. But there's a real danger, and the thing that we must not do is pretend to show approval for sins that God says are abominable. I mean, that's the very last verse in Romans chapter 1, where Paul chronicles the downward spiral that society tends to go in morally, and we're there. We're at the very end of it, where even though people know God's righteous decree that people who practice such things, Scripture says, deserve to die. That's Romans 1:32. And then Paul says, but they not only do them, but they also give approval to those who practice them. So even giving approval to those kinds of sins, or, and I would classify with that, a refusal to say, yes, that's a sin, that's wrong, I don't approve, withholding your disapproval, that, I think, gains God's disfavor as much, or at least in a similar way, as the practice of the sin itself.
All right, so let's just be really practical here for a moment. And I'm glad we're having this conversation because it's keeping us from the cornucopia of craziness that I have assembled for you today.
Yeah, I'm glad about that, too.
Somebody's, let's say they're a school teacher, and the email is sent out. There is a transgender person in your classroom, in the school. You must use their preferred pronoun and name. Do you think that it is a sin? I'm not talking about wisdom. I'm not talking about anything other than sin. Is it a sin if that teacher acquiesces and uses a false pronoun?
It would definitely trouble my conscience. Again, I said I think this is a difficult issue because it's not something that Scripture specifically addresses. And to me, the whole thing would hinge on the question of, are you showing approval to this sin or not? If I could make it absolutely clear that I regard this as a sin and an abomination to God, but then comply with what the person wishes to be called, maybe I would. I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to pick a fight with an individual or seem to be rude. And it's not about rudeness or whatever. It's about our duty to make the truth clear. And so, to me, that's the issue. How clear has this person made the truth of Scripture? If he or she has done that, then he or she can use whatever pronouns they want, I think. But let me say, if I were that teacher in that place, I would probably refuse to comply, even if it cost me my job.
Okay, but that's you. You didn't say it's a sin for everyone. You said, if I heard you correctly, it's a conscience issue for Phil Johnson.
Right. Yep.
All right, but let's just say somebody down the hall at Grace to You, they made, because they're part-timing at the school system, that they made a different decision. Would you say that that person is sinning?
No, because, as I said, Scripture doesn't specifically address that issue. And in the absence of a clear biblical statement calling that sin, I'd be reluctant to do it. Now, if there was some reason for me to think that in complying with the directions, this person is also giving approval to the sin, that I would object to.
So if the email went out and said, we are asking you to use this pronoun and affirm that it's just Ducky, because that's the way they talk in 1920, that it's just Ducky that this person is transgendered, you must affirm their self-identification, that's definitely a sin.
Right. And let me explain why it would be a problem for my conscience. The insistence that you have to use the person's preferred pronoun is a subtle way of demanding that you approve of the sin.
Right, I agree.
But like I said, in certain circumstances, I might say to the person, or in this case, you're probably talking about an elementary school student, I would tell that student's parents, look, I don't approve of what you're doing with your child. My use of these pronouns in compliance with what I've been instructed to do is not an indication that I approve of this. And I just want you to know that I think you're making a grave mistake. And what you're doing goes against everything Scripture teaches us about the reason for which God made men male and female.
And you know what the result of that's going to be, don't you, Phil?
I might get fired.
No, probably would. Yeah.
Again, I think we have a duty to make the truth known. Now, different people might do that in a different way. To me, the big question is, are you showing approval or are you making clear what your convictions and what Scripture says about this?
All right. So what do you think? Because you know every situation gets very complex. You've done enough pastoral counseling. What if that teacher came to you and said, Pastor Phil, I need your advice on this? And part of their conundrum is that they're actually witnessing to the family. They actually have a very good relationship with that transgender child, and they believe that they're able to actually speak some truth into that child's life, and they don't want to put up a stumbling block by fighting over the minor when they're really making some progress on the major. Would that have any sort of impact on your counsel?
Yeah, I mean, you've just described the kind of scenario that keeps me from saying, no, absolutely not. You should never in any circumstance use the requested pronoun. If you truly are witnessing to them and they understand what you believe and yet they see you complying with a request for politeness sake, not because you're compromising the truth, but because you respect them and you want to treat them with the respect that we all owe to our neighbors, then I wouldn't criticize someone in a position like that.
Because you're saying there could be some circumstances that would allow you to say, I see what you're up to.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be any sort of pragmatism, would it?
Well, you might say it's a pragmatic rationale because you're saying what you're saying is it would cost me my job to do this.
Something better can come out of this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not the sort of pragmatism that throws out truth for the sake of approval, I would hope, that if you're truly witnessing to that family, you're giving them the truth they need. The incidentals, you know, what pronoun you use and all that, become far less important to me at that point.
All right. Now, just to continue with this so we can keep away from this just absolute cavalcade of crackpot preaching that I had assembled for you, how's my alliteration today?
Yeah, that was good.
I don't mind telling you. I think I'm nailing this one.
Yeah, and you were freestyling there, weren't you?
What other way is there to do this? I don't understand your words, Phil Johnson. There was a police officer, I think he was in North Carolina, been with the force for a long time, 51 years old, practicing the Billy Graham rule. He was asked to train a female police officer, which would require him being alone with her in a vehicle. He asked for a religious exemption, stating his religion, Christianity, teaches that that is a sin to do so. That's the way the article presented it. That's not the big point. He was fired for not doing his job.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about that scenario just for a second. Your boss wants you to start doing something that you believe is highly unwise, or in this fellow's instance, he actually believed it was a sin. how does the Christian navigate through what is bound to be yet another one of the many scenarios as our culture clamps down on Christianity? That was more alliteration, too, by the way.
Yeah, good, good.
Thank you.
No, you're asking one that really has a practical application in my family. I have a son who's a policeman, and he is a training cop, so he trains probationer cops and that. So it's a thing I've thought about and wondered about, and I saw that story, and I wondered why the guy took such a hard line. I have to say, if he truly believes it's a sin, that, you know, that's what his conscience is telling him, then he did the right thing to say, no, I'm not going to do it. But he also has to be willing to lose his job over it, because that is a job requirement in a situation like that. He would know that, or he ought to know that, going in to the police department. Now, in the department where my son works, police wear body cameras. So what you're doing and what you say is recorded all the time anyway.
It's everything?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why, in fact, nightly here in L.A., police chases are actually more interesting than most of the stuff on television. And everything's on camera, just everything. That's just the way it is. And everything you do is scrutinized. So it's not exactly the same as having another person in the car, but it's similar. There's what do you call it, accountability, so that... You know.
Okay, but even with that, the idea is, you know, it's the Billy Graham rule, interesting phrase. It's not a law, presumably. Should it be a law for the Christian? I, as a man, will never be found alone with a woman in what could potentially be a compromising situation from a lot of perspectives.
Yeah, you're back to a question that asks me, you know, what would you do personally and what standard do you impose on others? I do follow the Billy Graham rule. I have to counsel people from time to time. I wouldn't bring a woman into my office and close the door where there's no accountability.
We do here, but you and I, being in a ministry, we have that luxury.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of people who don't.
Right. But so it's a rule I follow. But if someone else doesn't follow that rule, they have maybe a different system for accountability and trust. It's not my business to try to impose on them a standard that I don't see that in Scripture. It's just a rule that I follow for wisdom's sake.
It is wise, though, that a male and female to be together from a multitude, just many multiple angles. It could be a false accusation. It could be a temptation. It could compromise your testimony. Regarding that latter one, Phil, compromising your testimony, do we live in a time, because cultural mores and attitudes change, where our culture, as a rule, understands that sometimes men and women do work together, and that doesn't mean they're having an affair?
Well, a lot of people believe that, and, you know, that's why if I saw somebody from my Sunday school class having lunch with a coworker at a table in a restaurant where I wouldn't go over and rebuke him for it. Might speak to him later and just say, hey, you know, tell me your thoughts on this. I wouldn't be accusatory. I would want to know, has he thought through those issues? You know, what sort of pressures are on him to spend his lunch hour with another woman? That sort of thing. I wouldn't be accusatory, but I would want him to think through the moral implications of what he's doing, because there are people.
Yeah, the wisdom.
Yeah, I wouldn't automatically suspect that he's up to something wrong, but there are people who might, and he needs to consider that.
All right. Another conundrum to continue keeping us from confronting the kooky craziness that I had prepared for you. I think I've run out of alliteration. Cremation. Was a subject that we had that we discussed. I think we did a big question, short answer on the subject of cremation.
Yep.
And Phil, I thought that I made it clear. I do not believe cremation is a sin, but I think the Bible points toward burial because it demonstrates hope in the resurrection that is to come. Well, not everybody agreed with me, Phil. What say you about cremation versus burial?
Did you and I talk about this before? I know we've talked about it privately.
Maybe, but we just posted a video about 3 minutes long.
Oh, okay.
And some people were actually quite upset about it.
Yeah, well, no, what you said is true, that biblically, in every case where a believer dies, he's buried, you know, unless he's lost at sea or something like that. I can't think of any alternative things. But obviously, there are people who, you know, drown in the sea and their bodies aren't even found. What about them? Well, at the end of Scripture, it says the sea gives up the dead that are in it, you know. And Scripture at the beginning says that we're made of dust and we're going to return to dust. Cremation returns you to dust in a faster way. If somebody thinks that cremation is going to be a hindrance to the resurrection, then they don't understand the power of God. I don't have a problem with it. I used to work in the funeral industry. Did I ever tell you that?
You worked in the funeral industry. You were the night shift guard.
That's right. I was the night watchman in a downtown funeral.
I worked in the funeral industry. You know, Phil, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm a part of a poultry conglomerate that is massive.
It's
a multi-million dollar industry.
Good for
you. I eat at Zaxby's is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you give them a lot of free advertising, too.
Well, they deserve it.
Yeah, I'm going to say something about Popeyes.
Okay, it'll hurt, but go ahead.
They have a new chicken sandwich, if you haven't heard. Anyway, you're right. I was a night watchman at a downtown funeral home in Chicago, but I did at times have to be like the attendant on guard for wakes and funerals and stuff like that. So I've done a lot of work, you know, in and around funerals. And it seems to me that pagan ideas have infected pretty much every style of burial, cremation, and everything else. It doesn't strike me as any more pagan to cremate a loved one than it is to spend $40,000 decorating that body up so that it looks lifelike, putting it on display while you have a party around the casket. That's just, you know, the way Americans, various ways Americans handle death, all seem kind of crazy to me. So it's another thing that I say, it's a matter of conscience. I'm not going to criticize you, whatever decision you make.
So we ended this with an alliteration bang. So cremation is a conscience issue, and we don't have to deal with the kooky, crazy preaching that I had prepared for you.
That's good.
Look at that. And wow, aren't we all glad.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
Phil, have you gone mental? Act like men, not like girls.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?